Instead of focusing my attention on Bama, I've been trying to delay Bama until Thursday.
No, so here's the deal. It's all situational. If Tennessee was playing a team that was, let's say, a 20-point favorite this week rather than a 35-point favorite, I might say yes. But listen, this is not the most interesting game of the week coming up. So I'm with Heather on this.
Oh,
talk about Mississippi,
yes!
Talk about Mississippi State as long as you want, because Saturday, not only is it going to be obscenely late, there are children in this state and people that get very tired very early. But
maybe
also,
it's a good thing that the children won't see.
No, that's actually true, actually.
Halloween's just a couple of weeks away here.
Can we make sure the recruits don't see?
Yes, but not only is it super late, it's, you know, we've seen this movie before the last, what, every year for like a decade, so
no, pretty more much. Than a decade, 12 years.
Yeah, 12, so it's like, okay,
been
like,
a couple of close calls.
This one will not be a close call.
This one won't. Yeah. Yeah, I had totally mentally blocked that they scored 58 points last year.
Yeah, 58-21 last year.
Well, Tennessee, didn't Tennessee give him a couple with the defensive scores?
That
Tennessee
happens from
scored
time to time.
The Heisman Trophy was won at that game
Kyle
last
Phillips.
Year. Kyle Phillips.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. I'm a Heisman Trophy voter. I enjoy that. That's
are you a voter? I don't know.
I'm on like the 15-person Heisman
Explain
block.
The Heisman Trophy.
Listen, it's one of the great joys of my life, and I'm not even kidding. So the Heisman Trophy, in short, was founded by SB Nation to be an annual award that celebrates large men doing things that we did not traditionally get to see large men do. And it can be a number of things, and usually every year about December, they break out like 40 of the best clips of the year of guys. It's just people doing things that you don't see linemen do very often.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
they don't get their credit.
Yes.
Typically, it's the quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, maybe a DB.
Sadly, budget cuts have prevented the pie-stocked banquet in New York City, which is, I'm not even kidding, a real thing. Last year, they did not get to do it, but they used to have a banquet in New York City where they served all kinds of pie, invited the three finalists to go.
That is so cool.
It's fantastic.
Have you been to that?
I have not gotten to go to that, but they hopefully we can get that going again this year. But so they have like 15 people that vote, and then they have a fan vote that counts as well. And so I forget who all's on the block. It is legitimately
How
one
long
of
have
the
you
most
been voting?
Fun. Since the start, it's only it's only like, I think this is the fourth year of the Heisman Trophy.
Okay.
So I think
BJ Raji, he never won it for the Green Bay Packers
should have. But they had a guy from southeastern Louisiana won it the first year, and then Brian O'Neill, the left tackle from Pitt, won it 2 years ago with his throwback pass and touchdown. And then last year, Kyle Phillips forces the fun, or I guess knocks down the interception, catches it, breaks about 47 tackles on the way to the end zone. Celebrated with some pie at his acceptance speech.
Yes.
So it was. It's so much fun. Like, it is great. Like, I appreciate.
It's a great looking trophy.
It is. I appreciate the absurdity of college football, and the Heisman is like the top of that list. It's
more
fantastic.
Fun. Football
it's
needs wonderful. More fun
it
because
absolutely
this
does.
Season has not. I would challenge any Vol fan to tell me that they've had a lot of fun this season.
I think
I
so many people, listen, college football, people take it so seriously.
Yes.
This is a children's game played by teenagers. It should be fun. People should not take it quite as seriously as they do. Take your work seriously. Don't take yourself seriously. I think that's a good just life advice.
Yeah.
And college football, listen, people putting their identity in college football way too much. It's a game. Like, it's supposed to be fun. And, like, there's not enough fun being had. And the Heisman is pure fun. It's one of my favorite things in college football.
And you know who started all that? It was Nick Saban. He took the fun out of the SEC football. He totally did. Deflated it.
I don't know. I feel like with the Junction Boys back in the day might want a case. There's not a lot of fun being had. There's less and less, I feel like, in college football. But every now and then, there's a few folks who don't take it quite so seriously. The world could be the world of college football would be better with a lot more Steve Spurriers than Nick Sabans, I would say.
Yeah, far more important and serious things that are going on than the things that we end up shouting about.
Pretty much
when it comes to the world of college football.
Yeah, exactly.
Among
it's
teams
one of
that
my
are
least favorite
go
things.
Win somewhere between 5 to 8 games. By the way,
exactly, exactly.
So speaking of not fun topics, concussions. Brian Maurer with the concussion this past Saturday, game time decision on this upcoming Saturday against Alabama.
Were you doing air quotes just then in the game?
Yeah, sure. So, what do you just make of where we are halfway through the week with that?
Well, I don't recall the last time I've heard of somebody having a concussion on Saturday and practicing on Sunday night. That's a new one for me. But, you know, I think it sounds like a lot of gamesmanship. I mean, he's been taking the one, you know, the first team reps. I'll be surprised if he's not out there playing on Saturday. But, you know, it's sort of, I think it was odd too, like after he has the concussion, he's still on the sidelines, running around, jumping around, bouncing around.
Yeah. Part of the post game celebration.
Yeah. It was kind of odd, but you know, it's, I just think he's going to play. I'll be surprised if he doesn't.
Is that the right move this week?
I mean, I'm not a doctor, so yeah. I know how a lot of concussions have been treated.
Yeah.
This one's been kind of weird, but it's, you know, I think you compare that. I mean, there's grades, like Riley Locklear, that happened to him like 2 weeks ago, and he hasn't done like anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's levels, you know, we're not doing the examinations, but it's a little odd, but, you know, if you're not in there, if you're not a doctor.
And that's part of the issue Heather and I talked about.
It's dangerous to like.
Yeah, there's a ton of unknown ask, yeah, exactly. On our side of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you ask a question, you get stared at.
Well, that's part of the job.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Back to the fun.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, there was also the aspect, it just naturally comes in the conversation, well, you're getting him ready to play Bama as well, because no doubt Brian's still their guy moving forward. Don't you think that's the case? I know Jarrett came in and helped guide them to a win, and it did what they asked of him. They didn't ask that much of Jerry Garantano, but Jeremy Pruitt still wants Brian Maurer to be the starter, especially if we think that he's going to be the starter this week.
Yeah, what I would have really liked to have seen, I mean, I think it's just as simple for the people that are concerned, or I guess, that they don't want to see Garantano come back out, which I think is somewhat unfair, but whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think that those three drives that they had, Tennessee runs the ball 9 consecutive times if Brian Maurer is the quarterback? Because I do not.
Of course not.
And no. It's,
they didn't change anything, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the same offense. Same offense. It's the same plays. I don't know. No, so, yeah, it was a very different game plan, a very different approach when Maurer left the game. First couple drives, they're throwing it around. He's throwing it downfield, throwing down the middle of the field, took some shots deep, took some shots in the end zone.
Yeah, running around. Yeah,
yeah, running around.
His play where he hit and then all of a sudden, Juwan Jennings play.
Exactly. And then he'd throw a double pass. Yeah, like for all the talk of a conservative game plan, the first quarter and a half was anything but.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. They felt like, let's just hold this line. Don't make mistakes. Don't give up. I mean, and that's... It doesn't signal anything more than a lack of trust. And in the first quarter, you saw a offensive staff that was putting the game in Maurer's hands and got him out to a lead, a couple costly interceptions, but some nice plays, and they got a lead. And they clearly felt like 13 points was going to be enough, and they were right. If they were wrong, this might be a very different conversation. They were wrong against BYU. They're pretty conservative that game as well. You know, we'll see. I just think... You know, you're going to see this look pretty normal, I think, against Alabama in terms of Maurer being back in the same offense you saw the first quarter and a half.
I can't hardly blame the coaching staff, though, for tightening it all down. I think they have some legit PTSD from Jarrett Garantano early on in the season. I think because it's so different than what you're used to seeing in practice that they're just like, oh, my gosh. Just don't let it mess it up.
Well, I think the biggest thing is just you talk to people around the program, you just hear so many people that just like they don't understand what is happening in his head. And so that's going to erode some trust when you can't say. That's the thing, I wrote about this in our takeaways, you know, on The Athletic on Monday. The mistakes that Maurer has made, they've thrown the same number of picks, and Maurer's played a lot fewer snaps.
Yeah.
But every one of Maurer's picks, if you look at it, you can clearly see what he saw, what he thought was going to happen. Some youthful mistakes, some overestimating his talent, one bad throw, one throw that was about a half second too late. But you can see, okay, this is what he thought. This is what he saw. Whereas, like, the Garantano picks from early in the season, the BYU one, the one where he threw it a triple coverage in the end zone, you just... It's maddening for the staff because like what did he see? Like it's really inexplicable. And so Maurer, you know, mistakes are mistakes. You can't turn the ball over in the red zone. But I think the staff feels a little bit better when they can see, oh, this is what he saw. This is what we have to coach out of him. Versus when you call some sort of play where you're asking him to make a bunch of reads and it feels like you're rolling the dice. It's pretty obvious the staff feels like we'd rather roll with the guy that might make some mistakes that we can coach out and understand and explain than give it to Garantano, who has just confused everyone this year. And it's you know, they were in a tough place against Mississippi State. But I did not think they were going to go so dramatically in the other direction where it was very clear they didn't trust me. For all the talk of the bird play, was a 2-yard completion. Like, it was a great play. Some they got, you know, Keaton and Gerard Means got enough on those blocks to free him, but like, they weren't really trying to take a shot. They knew the box was stacked as an RPO, and he just kept it and threw a short little hitch. And then sometimes you strike lightning.
We'll do a little what if with Brian Maurer. We're going to look ahead to the second half of the season for Tennessee, what we've learned about them through the first 6 weeks. A lot to still cover in the next 45 minutes with David Ubbin in studio each week with us from The Athletic. His appearance brought to you by TK Willer Jewelers. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward as well on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. This is Sports 180, FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Talking Tennessee football this hour with David Ubbin, The Athletic. He joins us every Wednesday. Heather, he joins us thanks to TK Willer Jewelers.
Yes, David's one-of-a-kind coverage for The Athletic is brought to you on The Sports Animal by TK Willer Jewelers. When you find that one woman and you need that one diamond, there's only one place to go. That's South Illinois Avenue in Oak Ridge, right there next to the Outback Steakhouse. It's TK Willer Jewelers.
So Tennessee plays Alabama on Saturday. Don't get mad, Heather, but what if we look ahead?
Yeah.
What if we look ahead past the Alabama game?
Okay. For this hour.
So, assuming Brian Maurer is healthy and good to go next week, what if in the first half he throws a couple of picks in the first 4 or 5 possessions against South Carolina? Do they ride it out with him, or at that point, would they take another look at Jared? How do they handle it if some of the mistakes that are understandable why he's making them still continue?
Well, not all picks are created equal, so it would depend. Yeah. So, it's, you know, we'll see. I think the question of how long Maurer's leash is a really interesting one, because we haven't really had the chance to fully see the answer to that, because he's been knocked out of a couple games so far. So we haven't really seen. He's made some mistakes, and then they go to Garantano, but it's like, oh, wait, actually he's hurt. It's like he's actually hurt both times. And so we don't really know exactly what it is. I can't imagine that it's 4 games long, which is basically what we learned Garantano's leash was. I don't think it's that long where they can just be so frustrated. Because I still think Garantano's ceiling is probably higher, but the trust level is sort of gone at that point. If you're talking about 2 first quarter picks and 3 drives, you know, unless he's hitting the receiver in the chest and it's bouncing off and popping up for a pick, then you probably will see Garantano. I think the leash is probably shorter after the last game than it was, you know, a week ago this time, because, you know, there's a pick and then there's red zone picks. And, like, especially in a low scoring game for a defensive coach, I mean, that's going to drive him crazy. Even if you can explain it, even if, well, we can coach that, it's still still points on the board that should have been on the board that make you breathe a lot easier. I mean, imagine if Tennessee gets the ball at their 9-yard line up 9 instead of 3, 91 yards right in the end zone. I mean, that was a
big difference.
That was a pretty, I mean, you could feel the energy of the stadium. It was nervous. Like, people, like, we've seen this movie before. Yeah. Like, it was, you could feel it.
That was a massive drive. If Tennessee goes on, like, if Tennessee were able to get to a bowl game later this year, I know a long way to go there. If that happens, that drive at the end of
that.
The Mississippi State game gets you there almost.
Of course, the flip side is if you can't go to a drive, you can point to one play against BYU. That would point to the other direction. Yeah. But regardless,
how did you pick it?
There's a lot of pointing going on at Tennessee football. Anyway, but like, you could feel it, and that was a huge drive. But the flip side of that is, well, don't turn the ball over. If you get 10 points on those 2 drives instead of 0, you get 6 points. Like, you get 3 points on those drives. The game is very, very different. Mm-hmm. And instead, Tennessee was in a pretty tough spot late because of some of those red zone turnovers.
Yeah, I think that's right. By the way, underrated motto for the season as well. Not all picks are created equal. That's good.
They put that. I think they're going to hang that one on it. There's going to be a banner at some point at the end of the season.
Oh, there's going to be a banner or something. Yeah, that's for sure. So what is the biggest thing that Tennessee learned during the Mississippi State game that can now apply? I hate to even talk about Alabama because, again, who knows? But for the rest of the season. Excuse
me. I think, you know, the biggest thing I would point to is just, like, when you're playing well, like, what you're capable of. It's tough because I hope people recognize, like, how good Alabama is. Because, like, this is, like, whatever happens on Saturday, I think is relatively meaningless to this team. They're playing different sports at this point. They just are. Like, watch Alabama and watch Tennessee. Like, Alabama and Clemson are so much better than everyone else. And then there's a lot of teams that are so much better than Tennessee is right now. It's just you're in different stratospheres. And so,
yeah, Jeremy Pruitt was not really that far off when he talked about the quarterback receiver combination that Alabama has.
A bold take that
a number of NFL teams would look and say, you know what, we'd like to have that.
Yeah, Judy, Waddle. I mean, it's crazy. It's DeMonte Smith. Like, their three receivers are as good as any in the country. And so, yeah, it's, you know, their third receiver has 5 touchdowns and 200 yards in a game this year. Like, that's just insane. So, yeah, it's just, you got to play against yourself this week. And you got to look at, don't worry about the scoreboard. Just play the game. And so, I think that to say, what they can take away from it, I think just when you get in a tight game, they lost so many close ones early. And they lost their only close game last year. I think when you get in a tight spot, I do think, if you're waiting for something bad to happen versus believing and trusting that something good is going to happen, I do think that's real. I think guys play with a little more confidence, a little bit looser late in games. And Tennessee's had a lot of bad things happen to him in close games over the last couple of years. You know, Georgia State, they made some really crucial plays, you know, that corner blitz that basically ends the game when Garantano gets blindsided and fumbles.
Yeah.
Close games, they made some bad plays. BYU, we've already discussed that. We know what happened there. Mississippi State went the other way. They made the plays. I mean, they were in a really similar spot against BYU late. They had the ball deep in their own territory with a one-possession lead, and they couldn't get it done.
Yeah, yeah. And against Mississippi State, they also, to respond after giving up a 90-yard drive,
that
could have easily been what set up a deflating, terrible loss. Mm-hmm. If they lose that game, that's terrible.
Yeah, and I think that's what they take away from
this. So to respond is impressive.
You're probably going to have some close games. Is UAB close? I think they'd like to believe not. I wouldn't be shocked if that's a single-digit game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, we've been talking about
that. Football Focus keeps hyping up the quarterback, Tyler Johnson.
But then South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. Yeah. We'll see about Mizzou. It's probably going to be some close games. And I think when you have one under your belt to say, no, remember that, we did that. You need more of them to really have that mindset that you're going to do that. But one is better than, you know, 3 in a row that you've lost close when you probably had a great chance to win those games.
When's Mizzou going to find out about the NCAA situation?
I don't know if there's anything official. Yeah, I don't think there's any. I mean, from what I understand from the folks around Mizzou, they're not real optimistic about it. You know, so. There's one lesson we've learned. It's don't cooperate with the NCAA. The height of naivete from Mizzou, because they felt like it was going to be lessened, and it was the exact opposite. They got made an example of. I mean, I am sympathetic to their situation because, you know, they tried to do what they felt like was right, and they got absolutely hammered. But, you know, when you get into the academic fraud territory, that's a the NCAA seems to take that a lot more seriously.
Unless you're North Carolina.
Unless you're North Carolina. Seems to take that more seriously than some of the recruiting stuff. Although, I don't know if you guys saw the D3 national title in Texas last year was negated because the coach had allowed a couple players to borrow his 2006 Subaru. One of the great college football stories, as we talk about people taking themselves too seriously. No player wants to drive a 2006 Subaru. No player wants to drive that. So it's like you're
legit moving out of their dorm room and needed.
So they borrow this coach's car.
Was it the one that's like half station wagon, half?
So they borrow this car. And then their national title gets vacated. That seems fair. That's good. So it's like one of those situations where you're just like, okay, like, you know, the NCAA, the main frustration is there's no rhyme or reason to the decision making and the punishments. And there's just so much inconsistency. And Mizzou is another one of those.
I think the NCAA is kind of underappreciated. It's kind of icy. We'll just leave that one there. David Ubbin, The Athletic, with us another half hour. We'll get back to Tennessee football coming up next. Another half hour. David Ubbin with us. Thanks to TK Wheeler Jewelers.
Yeah, thanks so much to TK for jumping on David's coverage. And you can read David Ubbin at theathletic.com every day. And we appreciate him being brought to our airwaves every week by TK Wheeler right there on South Illinois Avenue in Oak Ridge, right next to the Outback Steakhouse.
Joel has a midday sports minute coming up for you as well. More Tennessee football talk looking ahead to the rest of the season coming up next on The Sports Animal. This is Sports 180 on a Wednesday afternoon, 90 minutes to go until Sports Talk will take over. We have another half hour to go with David Ubbin from The Athletic covering Tennessee, theathletic.com, where you can read his work. With us until 2 o'clock here, thanks to TK Wheeler Jewelers each Wednesday on Sports 180. So when the second half of the season gets brought up, the bowl game talk, Tennessee has that that one win that's created some optimism, the win against Mississippi State that they really had to have. Is it too early to even talk about the idea of a bowl game? What do you think when the possibility of it comes up with still 4 wins needed to get there?
Well, when you beat a Mississippi State team that you're an underdog against, you sort of flip the math a little bit. And so there's a path, which is quite simply beat UAB, beat Kentucky, beat Vanderbilt. They'll be favored against Vanderbilt. They'll be favored against UAB, obviously. Kentucky will probably be close. I could see that being like a 3-point underdog on the road. Tennessee's got a better roster than Kentucky. Can they beat them? We'll see. I watched the Georgia State game. So South Carolina is where you're at. That's if you're going to get to a bowl game, you got to take care of business in those 3 games, and then you got to beat South Carolina. If you do all those things, you're in a bowl game. Does Tennessee take care of business in those 3 games? I mean, we watched the Vanderbilt and Missouri games from last year. Also, like, and that does. There's no guarantee there, but I think it does hinge on that South Carolina game. You got them at home. They're probably a touchdown underdog again, probably something like that.
Probably
South Carolina. Yes, they beat Georgia. You're still talking about a team that's playing a true freshman quarterback because of injury and Ryan Helinski. So it's
and he's been banged up a little bit. Yeah, looks like he's been hurt. This week,
yeah, but. And so I mean, the road is there. But you're going to have to play a lot of games where you bring your A game. Because Tennessee, they have to play really good against Kentucky and even Vanderbilt to win that game. You got to play pretty good against UAB to win that game. You play poorly against UAB, you're going to lose. You are. And then South Carolina, you pretty much need an A game to win that game. And Tennessee doesn't have to do anything otherworldly. Win the turnover battle. Don't, take advantage of opportunities. And you can win. You can beat that team, sure. So the road's there.
Yeah, because Georgia had them beat. I mean, you look at that stat sheet. Georgia thumped South Carolina, but they kept turning the ball over.
Yeah, and that's where the turnovers do come in.
Yeah, and so South Carolina was able to take advantage. I just also to feed your point about the South Carolina game, if you don't win it, and then you're talking about having to win 4 out of 4, what are the odds of that even happening? Like for this team?
Yeah, well, going on the road at Mizzou, I mean, it wouldn't shake the core of the earth if they won that game, but. That's asking a lot. You're probably a 17-point underdog, and we'll see. Kelly Bryant survived a pretty, tough hit. He's back on the field. But Mizzou looks pretty good. They can win that game, but you're asking a lot at that point. That's not crazy, but probably unrealistic to expect to go on the road at Mizzou and win that game. So, maybe you steal one. Tennessee did it last year at Auburn. They did it against Kentucky as well last year. It's not impossible, but as far as charting the most realistic road to a bowl game, South Carolina game.
Yeah.
If you can win that, then it's just take care of business. If you win that game, like all of a sudden the season is like, Tennessee might be able to salvage this thing.
Yeah. Well, and if you lose to South Carolina, you've just removed all margin for error as well.
You need to be playing above your head a lot. Yeah. That's the thing. Tennessee at this point can just play well the rest of the season. They don't have to play above their head, and they can get to a bowl game. Yeah. But they have to do it every single week and never dip below. Like, if they play a poor game, their margin of error is tiny. And so that's sort of where that's what the Mississippi State game did for you. Is it did kind of flip the whole situation of the season. And you're sitting there at 1-4 without a win over an FBS team. You're wondering, can Tennessee go 2-10, 3-9?
Yeah,
you get one big win, you say, that's who Tennessee can be. If you're that guy the rest of the season, 6-6 is not insane.
Well, the Mississippi State game is an example, isn't it? Because Tennessee didn't play a great game.
No, they played fine,
But the way Tennessee played it, it looked like it was the better team than Mississippi State,
right?
Yes,
they were by far the better team.
Yeah, so that level of play from Tennessee can make it look like it's better than South Carolina at home. And if that's the case, you get a win and you keep going on from there.
Yeah, I think that's where you go
that's
back to
the example.
Yeah, you go back to the Georgia State and the BYU game. I mean, Georgia State. If they play that game 10 times, Tennessee probably wins that game 7 or 8 times. Tennessee had the better roster. They didn't play better that day. I think they mismanaged that. BYU, Tennessee was a better team the whole game. They just made a couple mistakes late.
Yeah, 59 minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. Tennessee was the better team. They ran the ball better. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They rushed the passer. They ran the ball until they had to. They were the better team in that game. And you coughed up that ball game, and they did not do it against Mississippi State. So this thing, beyond the sort of gloom and doom that those two losses produced, just mathematically, they really put you behind the 8-ball. They needed both those wins.
Yeah, no doubt.
What do you think it did for Tennessee's maybe confidence in the run game? That I really took a lot out of the last drive, the last offensive drive for Tennessee that resulted in points. I mean, Trey Smith said it post-game. They knew exactly what we were going to do, and they couldn't stop us. And I feel like that means something.
It was really because it was the opposite of the BYU game. BYU game, they ran it 240 some yards. They were dominating that game. And then when they needed it, they couldn't get it. BYU was stacking the box. They couldn't get the yards they needed. Mississippi State, they were running okay, but like nothing really, you know, otherworldly. And then you're backed up, and then all of a sudden 16 yards, 12 yards, 8 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards. You're just rounding up yards. And that, you're right, I think that can really have an impact on you when you get in a similar situation where you have to run to seal the game. Your 4-minute offense, you know, they need points, they need to drain the clock. Tennessee got both of those to seal the game. I just think that was really just a gigantic drive for the season, for the Jeremy Pruitt era, for the guys on the roster. Can you continue it? You know, we'll find out. I don't know that Alabama's going to tell you whether or not that's being continued is the issue. Poor timing for the Alabama game.
Where you are physically coming out of the game might be the biggest test to see how you're holding
up. They should
up.
See if they want to do a scrimmage on, like, the second Tuesday in October sometime and just have, like, 50 plays and be done with it. No, none televised, well, closed scrimmage, counted in the win-loss column, and move on with their lives.
I know it's not going to happen, but I want what Andy Staples was proposing, I guess it was last week, in his one of his columns, where he's like, just get rid of these rivals that you have to play every year from the other, just get rid of divisions in the SEC and treat it more like a true conference. Get them off our schedule. Like, until they can come back down to earth a little bit, I would just be just fine with that, but I know I'm in the minority.
Well, how do you feel like Tennessee fans feel about that in general? Obviously, I'm relatively new here. I'm 32. I don't remember this being a rivalry that, like, meant anything.
It was huge when I was in college.
I remember the Tennessee-Florida. Yeah, Tennessee-Florida meant a lot. But Tennessee-Bama has never, to me, felt like anything that's been, like, if you were naming, like, great rivalries, you get a long way as like before you get Tennessee-Bama. And that's just speaking from college football in general. But, you know, certainly with the place that Tennessee's program is, I think just mathematically and from a program-building perspective, Tennessee would probably be better off hitting the pause button at least for a while. But what do you feel like it would mean? Because for me, my guess is the folks 25 and under would probably not care that much. I think your 40 and up would feel really...
I think that's probably right.
Do you feel like this fan base views this rivalry?
I think every year that this question gets asked compared to the year before, you can find a little bit more of the fan base that would say, you know what, if it went away, it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that are just never going to say that. But
respectfully, it also doesn't even have a cool name.
Now compared to 5 years ago or 10 years ago, I think it's a huge difference in the reaction that people would have. I also still come back to just the SEC schedule, and if you're going to go with an 8-game schedule, I don't think it makes any sense to have this format. 9, you could play it a little more easily. But in an 8-game format, I don't think it makes any sense just because of how many teams you have in the league. Once you expanded, this format became silly.
And there's no conference identity. I mean, for the fact that, you know, I missed out on the trip to Texas A&M because one of our sons was born, and it's going to be like 9 years before we can go to Texas A&M again. You know,
just got to get our priorities.
Yeah, that's just dumb to me. But again, and there, I also lived, I grew up, you know, in Houston. So the Texas A&M, Texas was the rivalry we looked forward to every single year. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that's an afterthought now, it just goes to show. I mean, your football team's got to survive.
Yeah,
and they might not have a, you know, just a penciled in loss.
You're gonna get me on my soapbox on the 8-game schedule versus the 9-game schedule, the inconsistencies in college football. But it's an odd deal. I think Tennessee's program probably better off if they, like I said, hit the pause button at least. But
I mean, and arguably Tennessee football over the last 12 years is better if it hadn't played Alabama every year, right?
You could probably take 7 losses away.
Yeah.
If you're playing Ole Miss instead of Alabama.
Yeah.
I think it'd be unfortunate. I kind of wish there'd be some kind of middle ground, because I think Tennessee needs to see Bama more often than they do, like, Mississippi State, where it's like, you know, once every 9 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But the every year, I mean, I think if you could maybe do some sort of rotational cross division, I would kind of be a compromise sort of guy, where maybe you don't have the cross divisions every year. The ones that you really need, the protected ones, I think should be. But I feel like you could have some sort of, like, I don't know, like a priority system where, okay, we're going to play. Like, because if this game was played every other year and Tennessee had a random South, you know, random West cross divisional game every other year, would that be the worst thing? You know, I don't think Tennessee needs to not play Bama for, you know, a decade, but the every year thing feels like you're kind of hurting yourself.
Next year, just use Tennessee with the scheduling. next year Tennessee will have played Oklahoma three times in the amount of time it's played Texas A&M once. Yes. That was on the road. Texas A&M's first trip to Knoxville will be 2023, I believe.
23 or 24, yeah.
Is there a way to petition the SEC and just say, we'll do that until Saban retires, and once Saban retires, they'll resume the rivalry. Can they get that in writing somewhere? Because that's probably the best approach for them.
Yeah.
Because it's not even fun anymore. Again, we circle back to what we were talking about.
It's not interesting. It's not interesting. It's not fun.
This week is what it is.
It's really no different than a Tennessee versus Chattanooga week in terms of conversation.
Week. It really is. Just like, okay.
Not far. Like, not much different, at least.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Like, all right, let's watch this, and then let's move on.
Will tweets to us, I'm 46, love the rivalry, but hate the every year deal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
By the way, the history of college football shows that you move on from rivalries
and
for different reasons.
I think it's different if it's a non-conference, because if it's a non-conference, then you're talking about, well, you have a money issue at that point. Like, if you replace, like, okay, say that you have, you know, Texas and Texas A&M. If instead of Texas playing Texas A&M some year, they're going to be playing Rice. No one wants to see that game. You're going to get 60,000 people versus A&M. You know, if you play that on a neutral site, too, that's like $5 million. You have a money issue at that point. Tennessee doesn't have to worry about that. You're going to be playing a conference team that, you know, people are going to want to see. A West team you probably wouldn't see that often. I think it's up for conversation, I think. I don't know how that would really go down if there was the SEC. The SEC governance, you know, I don't have a great grasp on that at the moment. But, you know, I just think, you know, I would be, like I said, I'd be a compromise guy on the rivalry. Don't kill it, but don't, you know, the every year thing is, you know, detrimental to the program at the moment, I'd say.
There's kind of enough already aspect to the current setup the way it is.
What are you trying to prove?
They're going to replace the VOLS on top of the stadium with Uncle the next time Tennessee comes to. Next time Alabama comes to Tennessee.
There you go. You're getting that fired up now. There you go.
Uncle. Oh, brutal. Yeah, we used to have so much fun. I mean, like when I started, that was 2006. So Nick Saban got back to Alabama in 2008 was his first season.
Seven.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's been literally, we had a couple of fun years at the beginning. And then, you know, Lane almost beat him in 2009. So that was actually pretty fun.
A national champion, too.
Yeah. And it's been downhill ever since.
And, yeah, I mean, they haven't had any fun against Saban.
No.
Not Alabama, no.
Few do.
Yeah, right.
0-18 former assistants now. The Saban tree is withering as we speak.
Somebody's got to be the first. Hey, Alabama, Tennessee this week.
Karate Kid. He never beat Mr. Miyagi, right? So there you go.
I think Kirby is the Karate Kid at this point. We'll see.
Man, I thought it was
Jimbo.
Not a good
week for Kirby.
Yeah,
rough week for Kirby all around.
Yeah. David Evan, another segment with him in studio, theathletic.com. He's with us thanks to TK Wheeler Jewelers. We have a final segment. We'll wrap things up looking ahead to this week and beyond next on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, off-air conversations, we've got Bachelor off-season talk.
You know who we need to get in on this? Our boy Dan Hood. He's over in Nashville a lot. Yeah. You can go check out this review.
Catching up on Jed.
let us know what's going on with Jed.
An all-time East Tennessee home visit. That was incredible.
Yeah.
In Market Square, man.
Yeah, listen, as a card-carrying Bachelor fantasy player, we have a league at The Athletic with about 40 people within the company in a separate
Slack. Is Mandel in it?
No, he's not. He gets updates because he like wants to know what's going on but doesn't actually want to get invested. But no, we have a separate Slack channel for League Smacked. It's fantastic. I'm waiting. Bachelor season, what, January, something like that?
You know, my family league, we had to cancel it because my mother-in-law would go read the spoilers so she could cheat.
There's a few people in ours that like really read all the spoilers. I just... Make better life choices, people. I don't understand this. Yeah. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, if you make fun of your significant other ever for watching The Bachelor or Bachelorette, go to TK Wheeler Jewelers for your apology.
Yeah, you can get that great present. We also need to work on you in the push present. You got like less than 30 days.
Let's do it, yeah.
This is a thing, and TK Wheeler can handle all of those things that pop up. When you find that one woman and you need that one diamond, there really is only one place to go. That's my jewelry store, TK Wheeler Jewelers, and he brings David Evans' coverage to the airways every single week. We appreciate him.
Absolutely. you did the story on Marietta High School.
Yes.
The quarterback there is of great importance to the future of Tennessee football, most likely.
It was a pretty interesting program. I mean, they 12 D1 guys, 10 of the senior class. But Harrison Bailey, number 3 quarterback in the country, committed last November when Tennessee did not have an offensive coordinator. Went down and saw him. I mean, he's the real deal. But just, you know, checking in on those guys and B.J. Ojulari, Azeez Ojulari's younger brother at Georgia. He's leading Georgia in sacks right now. Both those guys sound pretty solid. They definitely wavered a little bit, more so Ojulari, after the Georgia State game.
There's another example of why beating Mississippi State was important.
Yeah, yeah. And then Eric Gilbert, I mean, that guy, like, that he's one of those guys that just, like, looks like he should not be playing high school football. 6'5", 250. He probably runs a 4'6", 4'5". Like, he's just, like, unbelievable. Like, and so we'll see. Tennessee probably on the outside track with him, but he's still got it on, like, 8. I mean, A&M, Clemson, Bama, LSU, all the sort of usual suspects. Whoever gets him, I mean, he looks like an immediate impact player wherever he ends up going. But obviously Tennessee, they got a need at tight end pretty immediately. He's kind of a hybrid. Like, he's big enough to play tight end, but he's fast enough to play kind of slot, and I think we'll be interested to see how he's used. But he's just a great athlete. His coach was telling me they played him for 8 snaps on defense the other day, and he had 2 sacks, a forced fumble, and 4 tackles. So, like, just one of those guys who just, like, born a football player. And so, but yeah, Tennessee, they've already got Ramel Keaton on the roster. So 3 guys probably next year from Marietta High School. Marietta North, it's quite a pipeline. Check that story out on The Athletic.
Do they seem pretty happy with their commitments? I mean, can we send them a gift basket? Is that, I guess that's not allowed, but.
Yeah, they have these NCAA rules, Heather. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, no, I think they, you know, they know, I think what, Harrison said was, you know, the Great Wall of China wasn't built in the day. So he's true. It's true.
That is accurate. Yeah.
Yeah, that is accurate. A story. I checked the facts, actually. I checked the Wikipedia page and I looked up and it did WAPO. Say it was 4 or 5 days. Yeah. Anyway, but no. So, I mean, they understand, like, this is going to take time. And I think they also understand, like, Tennessee, for the losses early in the season, like, Tennessee is not the sort of disaster team that they sort of seem like they might be after the Georgia State game. It's like they're still got guys invested and so they're playing competent football. They got more talent than they did a year ago. So I can't wait. Those guys are pretty solid. I don't know. You know, Eric Gilbert, I think they are pretty respectful of him and understanding, like, this is a life decision and we'd love to have him. But, you know, wherever he goes, you know, they're going to be happy. So,
yeah, because those guys go through the experience themselves. Yeah, they know what he goes through.
I'm always interested in the recruiting process because, like, the kids, you know, even if you have an older brother, like, the kids in the family, they usually go through it one time. And so everything's new to them. They just do not understand what is going on. But but these things happen every single year. I think, you know, last year I went down to Atlanta and hung out with Wanya Morris and his mom. And his mom was telling me, she's like the nicest lady ever. But she was like, you know, I was getting these letters and he's talking about going to all these schools and I wanted him to go. I wanted the best for him. But in my back of my mind, I'm just thinking, how are we going to pay for this? Like, I don't know if I can make this happen. Mm-hmm. And like the coaches, they're like, no, like, all you got to worry about is getting up there and watching. Like, he's going to be fine. And, like, those things, it's just the people that just don't have any idea of the larger picture of college football are so refreshing to talk about because they're just, like, or talk to because they're just normal people. And the recruiting process is interesting because everybody's got a different story. And it's all just so unpredictable and interesting. And, you know, there's just no different. Harrison's sort of the raised to be a quarterback type of guy.
I would agree with you on the unpredictable. Interesting.
They can be. What
it
convinces,
gets a little tedious for
well,
me.
Well, here's the problem that I think you run into with recruiting writing and recruiting coverage in general is no one. It's all sort of horse racy, and it's the same quote. I mean, the next time a guy leaves a visit and isn't impressed or blown away, it's like the first time, and so it's like very formulaic, and people don't really ask interesting questions. But when you talk to people about, like, well, what, you know, like Wanya talking to him about, like, there was no chance they were ever coming to Tennessee, and their impressions of, like, no, like, he hated Tennessee when Butch was here, and then he kind of knew Pruitt a little bit, you know, with him recruiting him in Alabama, and then he was like, you know what, we're going to hear him out, we're just going to give him a chance, and then he ends up coming here. Like, that's a pretty interesting story, but I think when you get so, like, nose pressed up against the glass with sort of the recruiting sites and recruiting coverage, I think it gets so formulaic and so repetitive that, like, it's kind of a disservice. So there's actually a lot of really interesting stories that are happening within that world, and we try to tell some of those at The Athletic.
All right, so check that out. More stories to come. Before you go, simple yes or no. Would you get on board with me in telling Heather that it's a good idea to not kick the ball to Alabama this week?
Yes. And you should read The Athletic tomorrow for more on that exact subject.
That's
a tease.
I bought in. Josh convinced me.
All right. More on that. Check it out, theathletic.com. That's where David writes. David joins us. Thanks to TK Willer Jewelers.
Yes, thanks so much to TK. David Evans, one-of-a-kind coverage brought to you by my one-of-a-kind jewelry store. It's TK Willer Jewelers on South Illinois Avenue in Oak Ridge.
David, have fun Saturday night, by the way.
He was already going over that with me while you stepped out of the room.
Get the coffee ready.
This is a physiological challenge that we're just... I'm already... They ruined my week last week when I saw the game time. It was like Monday, just...
9 p.m. Eastern time.
I'm not going to belabor listeners who aren't particularly interested in my sleep patterns, what's going to happen over this weekend, but like, it's not good for the human body.
Be nice to him on Twitter Saturday and Sunday, @DavidEvan. We'll come back with another hour of Sports 180 right here on the Sports Animal.